Hi, this is Bennett Kelly. Thanks for listening to Cyber Law and Business Report. Before you take a recess to hear the latest internet law news and commentary, you are hereby ordered to download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app for iPhone and Android. Okay, maybe not ordered, but why not? You can listen live to my show and all our show hosts every day on our live stream or download past episodes with ease. So download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app in the iTunes Store or in the Google Play Store. It's an open and shut case.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
And welcome to Cyber Law and Business Report. We got another great show for you. We're broadcasting live today from IOLA in Hollywood because we're doing a special show focusing on the booming business that is co-working locations. And so we're going to have to start the show with a perspective of a co-working owner in New York, and then we're going to be talking to someone here in Hollywood about their experience working at IOLA. So it's a booming business, and we're going to start off with Jason Salzman. He's the founder of Ally NYC, which is self-described as the most badass co-working space on the planet. We'd love to hear his research on that. Jason, are you with us?
I am, and first of all, I want to thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Ally NYC, we're totally have the opportunity. We're happy to have the opportunity to be able to speak about our community here. So,
and first of all, I want to thank Harrow, help a reporter out for helping us locate people like you and our next guest as well. And hats off to them. But I think one reason I chose you, Jason, was because you were just so exuberant and enthusiastic about this space. And so how is it that you came into the co-working space, and why does it excite you so much?
Right. So I have a background in real estate and online marketing. And I never really liked what I did. I never really liked the verticals I was in. Real estate, although it is an interesting vertical, it just never really made my life fulfilled. I never felt a sense of purpose in what I was doing. I never really loved what I did. So when I had the opportunity working on an actual tech product, getting more familiar and acclimated with the New York City technology community, we noticed how co-working was a growing business, and we noticed that there was a need for it, especially in the Midtown area, because if anybody's familiar with New York City, Silicon Alley has been segregated to a small part of New York City that's below, 18th Street. It never really was in mainstream New York City, and we felt that with the huge transportation hub in Midtown, there was a definite lack of this type of space that was there. So my partners and I decided to invest in taking a 10-year lease in a 16,000 square foot space in Midtown Manhattan to groom a community. And when I had the opportunity to do it, I kind of jumped at it because I just felt it in my heart that I wanted to be part of a community. I wanted to take my real estate and marketing knowledge and apply it to a thriving technology entrepreneurial community in New York City and make a difference in the world. And that's exactly what we're doing, and that's kind of the abridged version of how I got involved. And 7 months later, and we're completely filled. We're taking about 10,000 more square feet on the same floor, so we'll have the whole floor. So we have about 27,000 square feet. Coming up, we have about 16,000 square feet now. We have 250 members and about 87 startups, actually 88, because we just signed a new member on today. And we have a 200-person waiting list to actually get into the space as well. So, the abridged version is real estate hated my life, got into this community, felt a sense of purpose, the community grew itself. The amazing people that are here spawned an entrepreneurial spirit that seeps with collaboration, innovation, that, you know, the New York City tech community is all about. So.
Now, it seems that your business, you know, it's interesting because you know, you're Alley NYC, and it's almost the logo looks like it's almost hyphenated, and in some ways, you know, your business model is hyphenated. You're a real estate play. You're a incubator. Whether that's part of your stated purpose or not, it just happens that way. You're a venue. You host a lot of events, right? And then what you've also done that seems really interesting is that you've created a market. You've made yourself a middleman for a market that was hard to reach earlier, but you basically started, and you and your other companies that do this are creating a market for people who provide services to startups. Because you've concentrated area where they can be reached rather than being trying to find them throughout New York.
Absolutely. One of our main goals, you know, was to kind of bridge the gap between big, large institutions and that offered, you know, let's say a law firm like our law firm partner, Mintz Levin, who's a very large law firm. They wanted into the community, you know, for obvious reasons, and just to let, you know, the audience know, you know, how that works, is any startup is kind of like a seed stage, you know, that's in our space. It's sometimes it could be a kernel of an idea, and sometimes it could be a startup that has a Series A to D round funding. To have the opportunity as a lawyer to get involved and give advice to these startups is kind of planting a seed that you're there for them. You know, we want in this community. We want to support the community because the ROI on a big business side of things is that should that startup go public or should that startup get an enhanced round of funding, they're going to need legal advice, and who else are they going to go to but the individual or the organization that gave them advice at a very early stage. So that's one initiative that's been proved, and that's the proof of concept that's been there, and that's another revenue stream for our space to engage sponsors and large sponsorships to get them involved. Because there is, if you're a forward-thinking institution, there is an ROI, a huge ROI in getting involved with this type of community. Also, on top of that, I'd just like to mention a lot of big businesses are getting involved because they want a change from their bureaucratic way of working where things are so slow-moving. And their competition is not another big company. It's actually an individual working at a co-working desk that doesn't have to go through all the red tape to get something built that is completely disruptive to any given vertical. And for a large organization to see that and to tap into that is gonna pay huge dividends in the end rather than create a barrage of competition that they never even expected. You know, Google started in a garage, you know, and now it's a huge business. That's what's happening right now. So we have sponsors such as Samsung getting involved with the space and other, you know, large sponsor names that are trying to not only plant the seeds and get involved with the startup community, but also change their way of doing work as they do it now, which is, you know, trying to like steer a cruise ship. So,
I mean, it is interesting that it's a new model, but it works on so many different levels. I mean, you know, the middleman purpose is huge. The venues. I mean, what have you had an event last night, right?
Yeah, we had an event last night. I think a better example. I mean, we have events all week long.
Right.
But the larger ones, for instance, that we're getting large corporate sponsors, for instance, Condé Nast. We did the first ever fashion hackathon sponsored by Condé Nast in the space, and over a weekend. I don't know if your viewers are too familiar with a hackathon and what a hackathon is, but it's a competition for the best application to be created over a short amount of time period, and normally it's over a weekend. So in this instance, Condé Nast had their initiatives. They had a fashion brief to talk about the pains of the fashion world and what needs to be solved and what's relevant for fashion to be disrupted in tech. And we had over 600 programmers in our space over a weekend long building over 70 applications to solve pains in the fashion world for prizes and notoriety. I mean, and now you have a situation where these young developers, really, they're doing it for the contest. They're doing it to be competitive, the competitive aspect. But in the big business mind of things, these developers got products built in 48 hours that would have taken Condé Nast or any large bureaucratic institution years to build. And they did it in a 48-hour time period, and they did it for really nothing. And it's great for the community. It's great for all the developers to get together and hang out with each other. And it's really great for them to learn a new vertical, because a lot of the verticals out there are being used over and over again. They're being saturated. Healthcare, and there's definitely a huge need for new pains to be solved in healthcare. However, there's a huge shift towards that and the education vertical. But a vertical like fashion, a developer wouldn't even think to get involved because they wouldn't understand the pains that could be solved through technology. And now an event like that opens up a whole new world for them to build applications and to disrupt a whole entirely new space for them, which needs it.
So you are, I mean, that's another element I hadn't thought of. You're basically engaged in crowdsourcing.
You're correct, yeah. Crowdsourced product development, I guess you'd say. And yeah. with crowdsourced product development, you have crowdsourced feedback. You get feedback from the crowd by presenting your ideas. There is no such thing as working in a vacuum when it comes to engaging one of these hackathons. You actually pitch your idea as an entrepreneur, and you build a team around your idea of who's actually interested in building it. So you're actually crowdsourcing your idea. You're validating your idea by having people come and be part of the build, because most developers, the good developers, especially in New York City, will not build anything if they don't feel that it's a good product, if their heart's not into it. So you're actually getting a sense of validation in that process, and you're building it for the goal of having a major institution potentially fund the idea. You know, there are going to be products that are going to disrupt that are built in a 48-hour time period, which is amazing. We have a saying here: what took you 6 months took me 3 days. And that's a great way of looking at, you know, a collaborative work environment like Ali NYC. So,
and this space, I don't know if you've seen any of the data in terms of the size of the industry, but there was a survey done that in 2010 there was like only 670 co-working spaces worldwide. And now there's up to 2070, and there's even in one in Wasilla, Alaska, but it's unclear whether you can see Russia from there. But
amazing.
And so it's just the breadth and just the dramatic takeoff is astounding.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a major contributor to the growth of co-working spaces is not just the real estate play that's involved. You have to see far beyond the real estate play. Obviously, if anybody out there wants to know more about the co-working business model, it works much like a gym membership, where square footage in a real estate play is really not taken into consideration. It's really how many people you can actually fit in your space that your space will allow you, and to understand that you can sell shared desks multiple times, so it works like a gym membership where not everybody comes in at the same time. So you can essentially sell one desk multiple times. Now, that is a sustainable business model. But the truth about co-working and the real value is what you do once you build an amazing community and how you can actually benefit that community by getting them opportunities outside just the real estate play to bring them into your space. For instance, you know, like an institution like Condé Nast that's looking, obviously the magazine industry is suffering for the last, you know, however, 10 years, however it's been dying. They're looking for new technology to be built. You know, what better way of tapping into the new technology than getting into the young developer stage? And what great opportunity for these young developers to come out of a school or not even go to school and work for an institution like Condé Nast and actually be noticed on what they're actually building. So what I'm trying to say, the overall picture of things is there's a lot more value than just a real estate play if you would like to invest. I mean, the future of Alley NYC, well, we have a lot of initiatives, so I won't bore you with those. But the obvious initiatives would be we have a bird's eye view into the talent pool of entrepreneurs and developers, where we can actually take these unbelievable products that are being built, and we can actually invest in these products and help them grow. We can actually provide incubator tools and mentorship tools. We have access to venture capital firms that everybody wants to be part of these spaces.
I wonder whether your next venture should be crowdsourcing snow shoveling after last week. But we're going to take a short break, and we can answer that when we come back after these messages. You're listening to WebmasterRadio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Ever wondered how you could have access to your own SEO expert, paid search specialist, or social media wizard? Looking for help with your affiliate, display media, or email marketing? Look no further than the folks at Fang Digital Marketing. Fang Digital specializes in both paid and organic search, social media, display, and mobile advertising solutions, and is staffed by industry veterans from Google, Yahoo, and one of the industry's most influential PPC experts. Fang Digital's award-winning staff stays on top of the latest in digital trends and offer tailored solutions so they can audit your progress and build a roadmap to your success. Learn more about their expanding range of full-service strategic marketing solutions at fangdigital.com. That's FANGdigital.com.
Discuss and shape the future of performance marketing in New York City, March 12th to the 13th at the Performance Marketing Insights Conference. Come hear from and talk to other global industry leaders as they share how they're developing new revenue streams, deploying the latest technologies, preparing for increased regulation, and leveraging for the most effective digital advertising channels. WebmasterRadio.fm listeners can save 15% on registration by using the promo code WEBMPMI15. That's WEBMPMI15. For more information and to register today, visit PerformanceMarketingInsights.com.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. Top SEOs send you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let Top SEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking to Jason Saltzman, and he is just a wealth of enthusiasm and ideas on this interesting space. Where do you see your company a year from now or 5 years from now?
That's a great question. I mean, to me, you know, there's no secret. You know, the startup fad that's going on right now, not only is it producing sustainable businesses, but there's kind of a gold rush to it. There's a little bit of a bubble going on. We'd be kind of, you know, ignorant to say that there isn't, just given the amount of financing that's being raised and not being raised towards these things, and with the growth of individual startups out there. you know, we're thriving as a co-working space quicker than ever, and these spaces such as ours are thriving around us, and that's why you see, I believe, a direct increase, you know, in co-working spaces, in the opportunities that are out there. But I see a bigger picture in the way we've actually learned to collaborate with one another through co-working. I think that co-working far supersedes the startup world. I think that co-working and a collaborative work environment breeds innovation in products, and things that are being built can be built much better in an open environment. I'm not going to mention who, but I had a major media organization that was in my space that looked around and said, whoa, you know, this is an open environment. It's amazing. You know, we did a study, and this is speaking of the large organization, we did the study on our cubicles. We lowered the cubicles by 2 feet, and everything got, so much more got done, you know. So I said, take the cubicles out. And they're like, whoa, we're not ready for that. But my point is that these centers and co-working spaces can very well be educational resources for companies can come in and learn to collaborate with one another, get rid of that secretive veil that has been, at one point, a good growth tool in a capitalistic society, but I feel that's over. I feel like the age of developing in a vacuum is dead. And the more secretive you are, the less potent your product's going to be, especially with the social aspect and social growth of the world these days. So things need to be built in an open environment. And I feel like, to answer your question, I know this is the long version, but to answer your question, I feel that huge organizations can learn and come into our space and take some time into this space to see how to work collaboratively, to see, you know, knock down the bureaucratic channels, start innovation labs, you know, inside spaces such as Alley NYC. And I feel that we very well might become a learning center to these organizations and or have products outside these bureaucratic channels to get things done. For instance, if a large organization wants to build a product but doesn't want it to come out 3 years later, have it built in a space like ours where we actually can validate it through a crowdsource method through one of our many startups here, such as, you know, Lean Startup Machine is actually in our space, and they teach you how to validate your ideas and assumptions, and they work with, you know, they work with the White House. They work with they just had an event at the USP, their workshop at the United Postal Service, which definitely needs help, obviously, right now, to validate their ideas. And, you know, we have that in our space where, you know, come in with your ideas, we'll validate it, you know, we'll build it, and then we'll hand you, you know, a finished product that, you know, that works for your business outside, you know, the bureaucratic channels of getting it done these days. So there's a lot. I don't know exactly what it's going to be. We're vetting some ideas right now, but it looks like building products for big business and teaching a different way of working to big business is definitely in the long-term picture.
Now, Jason, just as, you know, as a lawyer and as a matter of public policy, I don't know if we want the Postal Service to be badass.
Right? I know. I said, what's there to validate? Just shut down.
So, you know, in terms of the people you attract, how do you look for certain types in terms of selecting who's coming in, or?
Yeah. Well, we do. It's a very good. We really do not consider us a technology space. We consider us more of an entrepreneurial hub, where entrepreneurs can come and build their businesses. So with that, we really look for people that are into the community aspect, because essentially we've created a community. We kind of take that arrogant stance on that's so prevalent in startups, either from the Valley or even in the Alley. You know, there's this kind of holier-than-thou attitude, this poshy attitude that has been developed, and we really try to break that down and say, you know, we don't want you here. If you're open to have your ideas looked into and to help people and to get help and to just grow your product collaboratively, then we are we are into having you here. And the way we really vet that is we meet everybody. I've started this place with dirt on the ground, and I meet everybody. I have a really good support staff. My lead guy, my head guy, my chief of operations, his name is NC, like North Carolina, and we've had meetings. We interview people before they come in, and we have a conversation. How could the community benefit this person, and how could this person benefit the community? It's really not about Ali NYC. It's about the community that we have here. And on that system of methodology that we grew this place, it's becoming a really special place. And I suggest that anybody who's thinking about co-working space as a business model has to take that into consideration when they're opening it. They have to understand the environment that they're getting into. Because we've gotten approached, you know, by other states and other countries to open up co-working spaces. And the one thing we tell everyone is, you know, as if I'm going to consult in any type of way, is to find out the environment there, you know, how to tap into the environment, how to make a space where people wake up in the morning and want to go into the office. And that's not such an easy thing. So,
well, we only have a few minutes left. Can you tell us, if people want more information, what's the best way to find out about Ali NYC?
Sure. So if anybody's interested, they can go on our website. It's alleynyc.com. It's A-L-L-E-Y, NYC, like NewYorkCity.com. They could tweet us at alleynyc. That's probably the best way of reaching us. If you're in Manhattan, you could stop by. We're at 507th Avenue on the 17th floor. You can't miss us. You know, if anybody wants a tour, I'm more than happy to show them around. If anybody's interested in any sponsorship opportunities to be part of the community, we have an open policy for that. You can come in and check out our community and see how we can get you involved. And, you know, I think that that's the best way to do it.
Well, I definitely want to thank you. It's been a pleasure having you. And you're such an enthusiastic spokesperson for this space and this industry. It's been a pleasure having you, and I'm sure we're going to enjoy following how your company in the space grows over the next years or two.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you everybody for listening, and it's been great. Thanks again.
So as I said, that we're broadcasting live from IOLA, and which is another co-working space in Hollywood. We're actually right directly across from the Roosevelt Hotel, where the first Academy Awards were held, and which actually is famously haunted. You hear tons of stories, even some of them involving Montgomery Clift, the famous actor. So that is where we are. And so our second segment, we're going to be talking to someone who resides here. He's a tenant, and his name is Justin Mason. He's the founder of Jam Studios, and I've met with him and had dinner with him the other night, and he's just a fascinating gentleman, and I'm sure he's going to be on the show for a variety of other reasons, because this guy is up and coming, and he definitely has a vision for his business that I think is going to attract a lot of other people. And Justin, thank you for hosting us here today at IOLA. Tell us a little bit about Jam Studios.
So Jam Studios, previously I set it up as a one-stop shop for creative marketing for clients and whatnot. Lately it's been more about incubating some of my own ideas. Ultimately, my background's in industrial design. From the time I was 14 to 18, I was working in product design. So I learned the whole process of bringing ideas to life. And Jam Studios is a company that is creating a duplicatable model for bringing ideas to life across technology, entertainment, and design.
So, what made you choose, first of all, co-locating? this is live. What made you choose a co-working space, and then once you made the decision with IOLA?
So, I happened to fall upon it. I did a speaking engagement after raising a bunch of money through crowdfunding, and I was invited to do a speaking engagement, and it happened to be here. And I knew nothing about co-work before that, but when I came here, it was completely crowded, and the person in charge, Chris, can't come up and talk to me after I was done speaking. And he said, you know, it's a curated space. They're recruiting certain types of people, and they're creating this environment. And it just sounded right up my alley as far as entrepreneurship and being surrounded by other people like me. So that's how I found out about it.
And so once you made that decision. What was it like, you know, your initial kind of transition to the space? You know, was there any issues or any expectations you had that you had to adjust? What's the adaptation to a space like this versus, you know, everyone's kind of worked in a traditional office at one point in time?
It was really, really easy to adapt. Basically, you find a place to sit. It seems like people kind of end up in the same places over and over again, but you find an open table. At the time, I had a team. And you go in there and you sit and you start working and you start meeting other people around you. They introduce themselves. You introduce yourself to them. And one of the cool things is you'll be working all day long. And then at night, people will just start showing up for an event. And it's like the networking comes to you, which is really cool. So the one thing you have to adapt to, I'd say, is the fact that there's always new people coming in. And there can be a little bit of a distraction in that there's so much opportunity around. And there's so many people with different types of projects that you could find yourself, if you're a talker like me, you can find yourself talking to a bunch of different people and getting distracted.
I guess in terms of getting distracted, is this in the give and take, to the extent that it is collaborative, you know, if people, you're always being asked to give, you never get to, one, either take, or two, you never get your work done.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, as far as getting your work done, that's up to you. People will definitely respect your time and your availability. For me, I've had a really great opportunity. There's a company called Rovit who had seen my working ethic and who had seen what I do. And they actually came up to me and started asking me for advice. And the next thing you know, I'm on an advisor and I have stock in their company. But at the same time, I'm able to go back to them and bring him on as an advisor to my company. So the give and take seems to be really, really fair.
Is Rovit here?
Rovit's here at IOLA. It's a company kind of like iTunes online, except what they do is instead of taking 30% of the content provider's money when they sell, let's say, $1 video or music, Rovit will give all the profit to the content provider and just makes money on advertising.
So, and as you work together, there's the other element is that these, to an extent, they're your competitors. In terms of possibly you could be in the same market, but also your competitors in the eyes of getting money from venture capitalists who come here all the time. And so how does that tension work? And you know, have you ever heard of anything of, you know, people saying, well, he's sneaking around trying to steal my trade secrets or anything like that?
You know, there's companies, for instance, like Filmbreak and Rovit, who are both in the film business and both in the distribution side, and they seem to be very, very friendly. Recommend certain contacts to each other. The nice thing is that, like, for instance, with venture capital, it's all about introductions. And so having similar like-minded companies introduce you to other capitalists, assuming that they trust you and that you're vetted through them, actually opens up opportunities. In some cases, like, let's say for me, I do some graphic design work. There are other graphic designers here. So that does create a competition in a way, and certain people, you know, based on their abilities, are going to find more work than others.
And as this has progressed, I mean, you started talking about how you initially got here, and that was because you were giving a talk on crowdfunding. And you're actually working on a book, I believe, on crowdfunding and using Kickstarter.
Sure, yeah. I'm putting together a book called Breaking the Kickstarter Code. It's interesting. Because I was successful, we did a campaign that was 220K on Kickstarter. We raised the first 75 grand, which was our goal in the first 3 days. So because of that success, I've almost landed in this niche of a market for these crowdfunding events. And I'm actually putting together a book called Breaking the Kickstarter Code, which is just a very simplified and duplicatable model to create successful campaigns.
What was the campaign that you were successful with for Kickstarter?
It was a film called Space Command, spacecommandmovie.com. You can find out more. But a bunch of science fiction luminaries came together, guys from Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and all kinds of great shows. They came together and said, you know what, the studio system sucks. We want to bypass that, and we want to go to the fans to greenlight this film. And they were among the first to do it. We were real early in Kickstarter's success and in their growth. And we were in the right place at the right time. And they had a great fan base that we were able to capture and drive to Kickstarter. And it worked out fantastically.
Do you have any other projects in the work on Kickstarter?
Sure. I'm working on something kind of neat with that could be potential with a bunch of YouTube stars. One of the things about Kickstarter, a lot of people make mistakes, is that they don't have a fan base in advance or they don't properly prepare. In this case, I've often talked about how a YouTube star might be more effective than a celebrity whose name everyone knows because they have a fan following who are subscribed, and they're talking to them every day. They know how to put out calls to action that really work. So somebody with a social media following makes all the difference in the world, and I'm really hoping that this goes through and that we get started on this project. It could be big.
Well, I read an article about how the whole explosion of Gangnam Style last year, and how it was because the record companies in South Korea, they get YouTube, they get viral, and so they package their material just for that purpose. And so then when they go on tour, they already developed their fan base through YouTube, so it's easy to contact them and say, hey, we're going to be in Cincinnati or wherever, come buy our tickets. And that's kind of what you're talking about, I think.
That's right. I mean, once you have subscribers, once you have people following you, obviously there's a difference between a true fan and somebody who just likes your page. There's an article you can look up called 1,000 True Fans. But yeah, I mean, once you have some true fans, then it's all about your pitch. It's about the information you put in front of them. In my case, I came up with a way to do visual storytelling, which at the time was different than anyone else was doing on Kickstarter. It's the ability to tell your story from top to bottom on Kickstarter using graphics and telling it visually, because they say number one rule in Hollywood is people don't like to read. So how can you give your pitch visually, both before anyone watches your video, you do it through graphics and telling a story?
Well, of course, naturally, this being radio, we're going to do everything visually the rest of the show. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more on Coworkapalooza. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Aim clear. This is how you sell with social.
Have you tried to do CPA conversions using social PPC and failed? You're not alone. These days, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube require true specialists to dominate.
Aim Clear, the agency,
brings definitive psychographic targeting,
bleeding-edge creative,
and killer content amplification to the social advertising table.
Aim Clear, this is how you sell with social. Aim Clear, this is how you sell with social.
Johnson, what's this mantis I keep hearing about? Do we need to call an exterminator?
No, sir. Moby Mantis is our new SMS marketing tool.
SM what?
SMS. Text messaging. Moby Mantis lets us communicate directly with our customers in real time. We can send promos, coupons. It even lets our customers market for us by sharing offers with their friends online. It's been great for business.
Sounds expensive.
Actually, I signed us up for an extended free trial. It hasn't cost us a dime.
Good work, Johnson. I guess the only thing we'll be exterminating is the competition.
To get your free extended trial of Moby Mantis, text radio to 21691. That's radio to 21691 for Moby Mantis.
Rise, links, and web indexes. Take a bow to the largest link map in the world. Majestic SEO. Majestic SEO wields its virtual sword with speed and accuracy to deliver detailed reports of your company's link data and that of your competition. Let Majestic SEO make you your own king of internet marketers and join the crusade of clients and agencies that have chosen the noble choice for link intelligence. MajesticSEO.com. Maximize ROI to use your time and let Majestic wield its mighty sword. MajesticSEO.com. It's good to be king. The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly. We're listening to Cyber Law Business Report, and we've been talking about Coworkapalooza, this amazing phenomena of co-working locations that have just taken off. Some other statistics that are kind of interest. If you look at how this space has grown over the last couple of years, it's phenomenal. We said earlier 670 spaces and 210 2010 to now over 2,000 spaces. The average price in the U.S. is $250 for a desk. But there's also been some survey reports that show that it's been quite effective. Some are more participants more motivated. 91% now have better interactions with others. Half of people who participate report higher incomes. Over half are more relaxed at home since co-working. 92% are highly satisfied or satisfied with the co-working space. And 78% of the co-workers are under 40, and which actually would be the case here with Justin, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I'm 25.
And so what is the age range here generally? What would you say the median age is here in Hollywood?
Gosh, it pretty much ranges. There's not a lot of people over 50. I would say anywhere from 30 to 40 would probably be the median, would be a little bit closer to average, I guess. But there's anything from young people 19, 20, 21 all the way up to, a little bit older. Mostly in a, anyone who's older, you wouldn't really realize that they're, 40 or 50.
Kind of like me.
Exactly.
And that was a paid spot. One thing we were talking about earlier is how he chose it, but we didn't really explain necessarily what his setup is. You have a desk arrangement where you do not have a fixed desk, but you can locate anywhere, and you pay a monthly fee, kind of close to the average.
Yeah, so I like to describe it as a little bit of a louder library. You walk in, there's tons of places to sit. There's a few conference rooms in the back that you can grab, and a printer and some little phone booths. So imagine just walking into a library where you can sit anywhere you want, sit next to the pretty girl or sit next to the techie dude who you think can help you out. And then as far as pricing and whatnot goes, I'm on the $200 membership, which is, I think you can come in something like twice a week. Maybe I get away with a little more, but you can come in like twice a week or three times a week during certain hours and work when you want. There's also a $400 membership, which is 24/7, 7 days a week. You're good to come in anytime. You've got key cards to walk in the door, and you're here.
We were talking earlier with Jason, and aside from having a promotion announcement that they're the baddest place in the planet, they also had stressed that their philosophy is one of their rules is no douchebaggery. And, obviously when you're in a place like this, you're working with others, learning how to playing in the same sandbox is an issue. And how does that develop here?
Yeah, so first off, a lot of these workspaces have their own niche. So in their case, it's the most badass spot. This case, it's the hub of entertainment and technology. So that's definitely something to look for, is which one fits your niche. As far as the no douchebaggery rule, it's true. One douchebag will bring everything down, and it really is true. I've had somebody involved here who we had to get rid of and take away his key card personally, just because you don't want that in your workspace. So positive vibes and all that good stuff. The nice thing is that if the management, the management keeps their eyes open. So if there is somebody who they don't want here or who seems to be doing the wrong things or just isn't really a nice person in the community, they will do something about it.
So that's the ultimate word. I mean, the word we've heard most, I think if you did a word check of the transcript, community is the one word that keeps coming up. And I guess that's the value of it. Now, you talked earlier about the value of the community in terms of the people who reside here. What about the fact that this is now a hub that, as I was talking earlier with Jason, that one thing I think is what's brilliant about this space is that they've made themselves a middleman for a market that didn't exist, or wasn't well formed, and now is. It's easy, I'm going to all these events as a lawyer for startups and at places like this in Santa Monica and elsewhere. It's to talk to startups, and where before it was just you kind of had to do a shotgun approach and hope you found them. So what's it like now that you have this middleman basically, for lack of a better word, pimping for you, with all these different players that can really help your business grow?
Yeah, it's funny. Pimping is the right word. Chris, who is the guy who founded and who runs IOLA here, he's a networking machine, and he's introducing people to everyone else. And, you know, if you ask him for advice or ask him for an introduction, you know, assuming that you're vetted by him, he will give you that introduction. So that's a huge opportunity. And then the fact that there's this whole community, you know, I'm in Hollywood, but especially Santa Monica. But all around Los Angeles, there's these various places that's a community of people like yourself and a community of events and things going on. It's like I could literally never be bored at night just going to tech events. And I'd say the best part for me is, you know, when I go to a bar, what do you approach somebody and talk to them about? It's kind of small talk. But when you go to one of these networking events, you're often at a bar. There's often pretty girls around. But it makes it really easy to talk to people. It's you're around like-minded people. So what do you do? Well, I'm in this. Oh, you're in tech too. Very cool. And you have something very similar to talk about. So you end up making some of the best friends you could ask for. It's much easier to approach people. And it really validates that you're on the right path as an entrepreneur.
It's interesting. You know, I used to be involved in political fundraising, and I used to say the same thing. The great thing about it is, and I used to joke, you know, now I know why Ted Kennedy got into politics. But, you know, there's always a party, and there's always attractive women. And as being single at the time, but they're intelligent people and they're like-minded people. So these are people you want to be around anyway. And so it just creates a fun environment. And so I really enjoyed all the events that we went to, you know, did over the course of the time I was involved in that. You know, a lot of interesting venues, and you met historic figures, you know, get to go to Bobby Kennedy's house. And so it sounds like you're having that same experience just in the tech world.
I think I saw something on Facebook. It was one of those little memes, those picture memes on Facebook. It was a guy named Jeff Bezos. It was a picture of him, and it was a quote that said something along the lines of, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, be prepared to be misunderstood for long periods of time. And that is totally true for me within my family, within my own personal friendship circle and people from high school and so on. Definitely very misunderstood. It's definitely a different career path. It takes longer to build an income. But of course, you have a bigger opportunity where they might get capped at a $100,000 a year job. You could be making millions and millions, if not billions, doing what you do it. So the time that it takes to reach those points can be often longer. But as a entrepreneur in this community, it takes me away from my friends and family who are on their set career paths. And it puts me with other people like myself that, once again, just validate that, yeah, you probably are on the right track. And yes, it's okay to be doing what you're doing, even though it's off the beaten path. So it's almost becoming its own beaten path, which is a canvas that you can create for yourself, as opposed to just filling in the, you know, coloring by numbers.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about basically you're a risk taker. I mean, and from what I've heard from of your career so far, which and I'm sure. You know, this is just a snippet, and we're definitely going to enjoy following the rest of it because I'm quite confident that this is this is spring training for what is probably going to be a very successful season for you. But that we're talking about people who take risk, and that isn't everyone. And what this does, in a sense, this creates a pool for being with other risk takers who are like-minded. And also because it's a co-working space, people who don't have their own space per se, they're similarly kind of situated. You know, they're all kind of taking the chance without maybe the huge resources that a lot of people, you know, someone wealthy might have. So they're all kind of taking the risk and are exposed in similar manner.
Totally. I mean, the truth is, this place beats my garage. It's so much better than a garage. I'm surrounded by, it's so much easier to recruit people than a garage. This is the new, this really is, it's the new garage for entrepreneurs and techie type of people. So that's the best answer I could give you for that.
Well, I have a strong feeling that the owners would be very upset if I had set up a basketball hoop on the outside of it, just like I did at my garage at home. But
they'd be surprisingly open to it, actually. I think that if you brought in a little basketball, that as long as it didn't make too much noise, they'd be pretty open to it. That's one of the fun things. It really is. You can create your own space. The only thing you really can't do that I suppose I complain about is that you really can't put stuff up on the walls. So maybe making a little bit more opportunity for that in different co-work spaces would be cool.
I can understand that. That's because we all, even when they were temporary, we all to a certain extent personalize our space. You know, some people bring pictures even when they travel. And, you know, I used to have, in every office I've had since I graduated college, I've had certain pictures, you know, just from where I'm from and, you know, where my father and things like that. And yeah, I can understand that. Maybe we can talk about Nerf basketball. That might be the solution. And so we only have a few minutes left. But, you know, Justin, is there anything else you want people to know about, or what's the best way people can find out more about, you know, your deciding things you're working on?
Yeah, so you can find out more about what I do at jamstudios.tv, jamstudios.tv. You can look me up at Facebook, facebook.com/Justin Massian. Twitter is at jamstud. But yeah, I mean, friend me on Facebook. That's the best way. Or shoot me an email, justin@jamstudios.tv.
And thank you very much. You know, we had dinner at the Roosevelt, which I mentioned was haunted. And just coincidentally, Justin pulls out on his iPhone a photo of a ghost, and which, you know, obviously we can convey perfectly on radio. Not. So in any event, I want to thank you all for joining us for this special edition live from IOLA. And we're still part of Silicon Beach here. And but this is definitely a space to watch. I think given the rapid growth, it's going to be continue to be a way for companies to start up and have a workspace that they didn't have. Like as Justin said, this beats a garage. And definitely keep your eyes on it. And another thing that I've noticed is also middlemen are coming involved with middlemen now. There's websites I'm seeing that allow you to book space at any number of these, you know, co-working spaces across the world. And so it's really becoming this a burgeoning market. And the ultimate sign that this is a big market is that they have their own trade show. Actually, next month in Austin is the their first trade show for the co-working group, and it's going to be in Austin in March. And so if you're interested, check that out. But this is Ben Bennett Kelly live from IOLA, and it's been a pleasure being here. I want to thank IOLA again, and I want to thank Harrow again for getting us such talented guests. And so we will be live from Santa Monica next week. But until then, quarters are adjourned. Have a great week, and we will talk to you then. This is CyberLaw Business.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.